You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2. Your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
It's football, mister.
Kevin Herron's going to stick around for another segment because I don't know if you've been listening to Mully and Haw for the last couple of days, but they have just been at like a football amusement park.
Living the life in Canton.
It's an amusement park. It's just guys in gold jackets, and it's one of those things where it's sort of our rule at the Super Bowl, or it's generally what they say the rule when you live in L.A. If you see somebody and you wonder, is that? The answer is yes.
Probably is.
Yeah, it probably is. Like somebody picking up their laundry or somebody getting pastrami at the deli. Is that really? Yeah, it probably is. So they were one of the people that they were able to talk to amid all of this as they're paying homage to the Hall of Famers and enjoying the game was former Bears defensive coordinator Rod Marinelli, who is he's coached a lot of greats.
Mm-hmm.
He has he's been around the game forever. We know how deeply connected he is with the defense that the Bears still run to this day.
He is one of the most respected defensive line coaches in the history of the NFL.
And he also did some, as far as film work, was a pioneer of splicing in. He was doing that sort of before it was cool when he was using
stuff from like Gladiator and
nature
Rocky
videos and all that, watching like a lion take down a zebra to show proper form, I guess. So Rod Marinelli was on with Mully and Haw, and he talked about coaching great players like Julius Peppers and Warren Sapp.
All of those guys that would work in the position should demand effort. That's something I just believed from day one. And the demanding of effort starts from practice. And I just think that work habit and doing those type of things every day, if not every other day, is every day. And you get the habits of really being special. And the coach has got to demand that he gets every ounce of production that matches his talent. You have to do that. When a guy leaves you, if he's got something left, that's on the coach. And it's just so important. I mean, that's with Warren, with these guys, when their production matches their talent, I feel good. And so, all of a sudden, a guy could say it's a great year. The media say great year. I look at the tape and I say it's not a great year. They're letting somebody else evaluate you, and you have to put cotton in your ears and go do your work.
It's a coach's job to make production match talent.
Hold on, because we have another example of this, and it's not that weird that you would hear that from Rod Marinelli. Especially when you think about what Mike Tomlin said about it.
I love to hear coaches resist the responsibility of coaching.
What'd you just say, coach?
I love coaches that resist the responsibility of coaches. That talk negatively about a dude that can't learn and blah, blah. Man, if everybody could learn, we need less coaches.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? If the group didn't need management, then we wouldn't make as much. I love reading draft evals and somebody's talking about anything other than pedigree, talking about how poor somebody's hand usage is. Well, that's coaching. Mm. I don't run away from coaching. I run to coaching.
Love it.
It all is in line with that not seeking comfort, because when you're a coach that's talking about somebody can't learn, you're seeking comfort because your teaching is struggling.
Yeah.
Amen. Amen, Mike Tomlin. Amen, Rod Marinelli. You guys know, when I see the raw physical traits of a player at any individual position, then my expectation is that there is development that is capable with that player, whether it is at quarterback or defensive line or anywhere else. And yes, there will sometimes be learning deficiencies, perhaps, with certain individual players, or the body mechanics of how they move perhaps don't suit the development at a certain position. But you know, a guy like Leonard Floyd, who he was around like the same time I started doing a bunch of work here at the station. Mm-hmm. Leonard Floyd was the top 10 pick
that
the
Bears have traded bend. For.
An exceptional bend as a pass rusher, and then comes here when the Bears just needed a great pass rusher because they didn't have any. He was immediately kind of thrown into the fire of, you got to save this Bears pass rush. He was not prepared for it. He was not developed in a way that suited that. Then he leaves here and has a bunch of double-digit sack seasons. Is that Leonard Floyd's fault? Is that the Bears defensive staff who's in place at that point in time? Is it his position coach's fault? There's a lot of different factors within that. But Leonard Floyd, since leaving Chicago, has developed into an exceptional defensive player with the double-digit sack numbers. Now, he is still, at this point, not one of the most feared pass rushers in football, but he's become immensely productive since he left the Chicago Bears, and there's other examples that you could utilize for something along those lines. Mike Tomlin, of course, is now the coach of Justin Fields, who famously was here in Chicago for the last few seasons. What would the development arc of Justin Fields look like in Pittsburgh versus what it is here in Chicago? It's something that'll be fun to sort of look at, to track and discuss, just, you know, for those of us who feel like there's still a lot of exceptional potential that could be achieved in Justin Fields. But coaches in general, the best in the business, view themselves as football teachers. How do I teach this person to execute their position? How do I coax the most out of this team to put them in position to be at their best as a collective unit? The physical traits might be there. The attitude traits might be there. They might work their tails off. And if you can combine all those different things together, then you have an opportunity as a coach to get the most out of an individual player. And the resume of the coach is out there on the film. Any quality coach will tell you that what's on film is their resume, because when it comes down to it, they can lead the meeting room however they like. They can do the practice drills and, you know, yell or not yell at everybody in the world. But then when the players are out there between the white lines, that's the resume of the coach. That's what they've been taught to do. You've either taught them to do that, or you're not teaching them well enough to do something different. And every good coach recognizes that, that what the people are seeing when the ball gets snapped, that's their resume of what they've actually led the players into.
Who is the most impressive person you talked to at Big Ten Media Days?
It was fun talking to Lincoln Riley. Actually, when I'm on tonight, I'm going to have Alex Kuhn play back some of the discussion I had with Lincoln Riley about Caleb, because Lincoln is a guy, as a coach, who's had a wide variety of number one overall picks and Heisman Trophy winners and Heisman finalists in the time that he's been a head coach. And famously, Caleb is the most recent example of that. So in addition to talking to him about, and actually part of the reason I'm wearing my Big Ten Network shirt today is because all these West Coast teams, today is the day it's official. We're now Oregon and UCLA and USC and Washington. They're all officially members of the Big Ten at this point, even though we've been talking about it for years. Today is the day it's actually a thing. They're actually officially in the Big Ten Conference as of this day.
Is there an initiation ceremony?
That happened in Indianapolis last week.
I just wonder if it's like a made guy in the mob. They hold up a card and there's a candle or whatever.
It's actually every individual head coach was on a chair and we all held them up, hoisted them over our heads. They were singing and dancing. Yeah, there was some glass breaking, everything.
Do you happen to know where UCLA is?
I've heard it's in Los Angeles.
You may not know.
That is. I'm aware of that fact. It is located in L.A.
It would make sense with the UC and then L.A. part.
University of California, Los Angeles.
Okay.
That's where it is.
All right. That's good to know. When we've talked about Illinois, and we've talked to our buddy Jeremy Warner about this, we've heard Josh Whitman say, we have to get above the cut line. You know, there's 18 teams. You got to get above the cut line. Mm. How does Illinois football program do that?
Now, the cut line will end up meaning a couple of different things, like in the future of the sport. As a lot of the power and influence in intercollegiate athletics continues to get consolidated toward the top between the Big Ten and the Southeastern Conference, then within those two leagues, you may end up in a position where that influence and power gets consolidated toward the top of those tops. You know, like right now, football is the only sport that legitimately doesn't need the NCAA. Even hoops still needs the NCAA. And then once you get further and further away from what's now the Power Four structure, a bunch of other sports, even football in some of the other leagues, the conferences, the levels of the sport benefit from still having the NCAA. I think for the Illini, as good as Brad Underwood has been in basketball, that's huge for their athletic department. The baseball program has been really good as well. There's other individual non-revenue sports that have shown, you know, a level of excellence to varying degrees here over the last decade, let's call it. Football is in the midst of three seasons where Brett Bielema has been – in his first 3 years, one of the more successful coaches in Illini history through three seasons, and yet there's only one bowl game to show for that. And so now in this new era of college football, for the Illini to make sure that their athletic department will fit into the bigger structure, into the hierarchy in the way that they want to, then that's where Brett Bielema and the football program will have to take another step forward. And that's where coaching development, because the conversation around college football has turned into this idea that the haves and have-nots are going to continue to separate further and further from the pack. I still don't think that's the case. I do believe that coaching development will matter a bunch, even with the increases in scholarships and going from 85 scholarships to 105 scholarships is the conversation for what's likely about to happen here. When that does take place, you're still going to have limitations on the roster. There's still going to be talent that disperses all throughout the sport.
Because of opportunity.
Exactly.
They're not changing the number of starting roles in any sport.
Right.
The playing time is still going to be finite, and that's still going to drive decision-making on behalf of the players.
Brett Bielema and the Illini, Kirk Ferentz and the Hawkeyes, P.J. Fleck and the Minnesota Gophers. You may not be in a position where any of those coaches is able to have a collective that outbids everybody else for the top players in the sport, but there's still going to be quality players available to be developed by those programs and to come in and have them, you know, earn an opportunity onto the field and then have an opportunity to win games when they get out there. Then if Illinois can win at a slightly higher level moving forward than they have in football, then yes, being in the Big Ten Conference and having a successful program for the Illini, then they can be in that hierarchy where they want to be.
It's been a really interesting couple of weeks, like seeing the new and improved SEC and the new and improved Big Ten. It's wild to see some of the, like, just they put out the new video today. I don't know if you saw.
They put out the new map video. Yeah, everybody's been eagerly awaiting what this new Big Ten map and the map commercial is going to look like. It's one of the things Tony Petitti was joking about in Indianapolis last week, the new Big Ten commissioner. Well, a year on the job at this point, but a lot of folks have been asking about this map commercial, and they finally put out the new one with the LA, with the West Coast schools in it.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be quite the thing. I'm in mode, man. Like my experience in Dallas put me completely like in the mode of being ready for college football to come back, and by proxy, being ready for the NFL to come back.
Uh-huh.
It was quite a thing. Like hearing some of the coaches down there and seeing what we had Big Ten on while you guys were down there talking to the coaches and seeing the kind of a Simply Line thing that they were doing with the coaches. I'm like,
there's so many of them, man. You got 18 coaches over 3 days, 54 players to talk to while they're all there. Like, it was a lot. I was doing it every day for Series XM, man. It was a marathon.
I swear, like, I looked up and I said to Dan, I was like, Brett Bielema was just talking, and now all of a
move
sudden...
Move him in, move him out, get your football information, get him upstairs, and get him out of here.
It was like, Rota Boat is up there now. I'm like, what is going on?
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of them.
All right, so you're on tonight?
I am. On tonight from 6 to 9, back on tomorrow from 11 to 12:45 before the Cubs. Had a little Cubs drama last night. It'd be fun to kind of recap some of that. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun couple of days. Now that I'm back in the mix, I'm going to be out of the mix for a little bit, we're making the suburban move. But, yes, next time folks are here, it'll be tonight.
Off you go. No longer a city guy.
I showed up today, though, because Ray promised me a breakfast burrito. So, that's why I'm here.
It's on the way.
It's coming. That's Anthony Heron.